This is exactly right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Like, if my ADHD brain is like I'm trying to watch a TV show, but I'm seated in the middle of a carnival, and there's all this stuff going on around me and all these distractions, and I can't hear the show, and I don't know what's going on. It's like putting headphones on, and now I can hear it, and I know what's happening, and there's still all these distractions, but it's doable.
Welcome to Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan. I am Dr. Dan. This show is about making the world a more loving, accepting, and compassionate place, one parent, one person, and one child at a time. The key to raising healthy and engaged kids is for parents to seek the same in their own lives while striving to be the best versions of themselves each day. No matter who you are or where you came from, with increased awareness, you can be purposeful about leaving a healthy footprint for your children, your family, and all those you care about while living your own life to the fullest. Today's show is stories about being an ADHD mom, a weird wife, and a regular human woman with comedian Ellie Hino. Ellie is a Minneapolis-based comedian who just released her debut comedy album, Soft Bones. She appeared in the 2019 and 2021 Limestone Comedy Festivals, Boston's Women in Comedy Festival, and was featured in Best of the Fest at 10,000 Laughs Comedy Festival. Recently, she's opened for Maria Bamford, Otsuko Okatsuka, Dana Gould, and Bobcat Goldthwait. Oh, that is a blast from my past right there. On Thursday night, she co-hosts Darlings with Ben Katzner, a weekly showcase of local and national stand-up comics at Zora Darling in Minneapolis. Ellie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Dan. This is great.
So, okay, so many places to start. I loved your album. I was laughing in my office by myself. I think people could hear me through the walls. I'm looking forward to that. I just want to say, first, congratulations. How big is that for you for this to be like your first solo?
Oh, thank you so much for listening. That's awesome. I mean, it's wild. It's a big deal for me. And it's really cool because when I recorded it before I had my label behind me. They're Blonde Medicine and they're awesome. But I kind of did it a little bit last minute. So I had a show scheduled and I kind of felt like, shoot, I feel like this is the time I should record. And so I gathered it all together and I made it happen the way I make everything happen, which is pretty,
which has nothing to do with ADHD, I'm sure.
No.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. So I do everything last minute, but I do it right.
You do it. You do. Anyway, so it came together.
It came together.
You get it done.
It came together. And I really still never knew if it would be a thing for almost another, 9 months or something before it got mastered and everything and sent out. And then I got a label behind it and it just all sort of came together. And it's been so fun.
Yeah.
Because I'm in my mid-40s and I just honestly, to be sort of at the beginning of a stand-up career in my mid-40s is, it's exciting and scary and, I don't know, kind of awesome.
It is awesome. And it's a role model for everyone, not only your child, but your peers, everyone listening, that the time is always now. Like, there isn't this too late thing. Like, if you have this dream, you have this purpose, is like, do it. Go do it. Take a step.
There was also a little bit of feeling like it was too early, because I haven't really been headlining for that long. And I think sometimes people think, well, you shouldn't really record until you've been doing it for longer, more professionally. Anyway, so I kind of felt like, I wonder if people think, who is she to decide it's time? But that was a really powerful thing for me to be able to decide for myself, just like, it is time.
Right. And that is a really good point, because there's the messages that we get from the peoples out there, the powers out there, the culture. And then there's the messages we get within ourselves. And who do we listen to?
Yeah. Hopefully ourselves.
Sounds like you did. You said, I'm doing this.
Heck yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering what you were like as a child.
Honestly, probably not that different. I was, I think I was gregarious and I was a pretty happy kid. I was, I think I was probably a little hyperactive. Definitely, I'm like the classic ADHD kid. The report cards were like all A's and B's, but the comments were all, if she could only focus on her work and if she could just stop talking during class, that would be great. But I wasn't diagnosed till I was an adult, like not
that recently,
long ago.
Not that long ago. Yeah. So did it put a lens back, like looking back through this lens? It was like, whoa, or not, or you're like, yeah, obvious, you know?
Absolutely. Even though I always knew I had it, I never really realized the extent that it affected my life until I was diagnosed. And there is a crazy, like, and I've talked to lots of late in life diagnoses that are, there's like a grief that goes with it.
Yeah.
Like, what could have been? If I took Ritalin in my early 20s, maybe I would have moved to New York like I wanted to, or, you know, maybe I would have done stuff a lot differently. But I'm happy in my life now, but there's always, it made a lot of things make a lot of sense, because the symptoms that I thought of ADHD were just hyper and silly and a little unfocused and frazzled. But I didn't know about any of the depression and anxiety that go with that difficulty focusing, and the easily frustrated and, you know, quick to fall back and forth through emotions. And so that was, it was interesting.
It is, you know, and those, I'm glad you're bringing those up, because those are, it used to be called like the secondary symptoms, or the secondary layer of symptoms. Mm. And it actually, it is, and it's not. Like, it does a disservice to, everyone thinks of hyperactivity, impulsivity, inattention as the hallmark. And that is true. But all of these other things can come with the package and really have to be acknowledged and addressed. It's not just, all right, we got to help you focus more. It's, how are you feeling? How are you able to regulate your emotions? Like, are you feeling overwhelmed? Like, all of these really important things that go into our identity and our sense of self.
Absolutely. Yep. I think that's important. And I found out when this relates to the podcast, but when my son was a toddler, and the guy who, the psychiatrist or psychiatrist,
maybe
I
medicine
don't know,
guy,
whoever tested
a medicine guy, okay, or
no,
psychologist.
The other one, psychologist.
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy who tested me said that almost every adult he sees for ADHD diagnosis is a mother of a young child.
Mm.
Because it was manageable up until that point. And then you have this little hyperactive maniac on your hands and you're like, oh God, right. It's like looking in a mirror.
Right. Well, and that is, so did you actually get diagnosed through your son getting diagnosed?
No, I was okay. Looking up symptoms on Google to be like, I think my son has ADHD. And then I was like, oh, I think I have that.
Right.
And I mean, he was too little to even be looked at for it yet.
Right.
And I don't want to like talk too specifically about his world because that's his choice, but it's not diagnosed, but it's definitely like on the radar. Like it might be. It might be a thing for him too.
Yes. Well, it's so common how we learn about ourselves through our kids and in our office. And we do a lot of different types of evaluations. And it's usually the parents saying, as we're giving feedback, it's, that's how that you basically are just describing my whole life. And that's how I found out I was dyslexic when our third of three kids was diagnosed. And here I am an expert in it and don't even fully understand that I have it because I've just been living my way. Right. So it's like, it's fascinating how the mirrors gets turned on us and we become more aware.
So self-aware. I think there's a huge amount of self-awareness and not just in mental health, but just in everything when you become a parent. Yeah.
Yes. So, when did you realize you were funny?
Ooh. You know, weirdly, I think I was funny the whole time, but I don't think I really realized it until I was in college. And I was like smoking weed with all my college friends. And we were making, I went to school for theater. So I was friends with a bunch of, you know, dorky, nerdy weirdos.
Yes.
And we were all staying up late and basically doing improv games. We didn't know that's what it was, but we were just making stuff up, making sketches with our little videos. And I actually remember a really specific time coming home from college and I was playing Trivial Pursuit with my parents. It was kind of, that was always a thing in my family. And I must have been cracking some jokes about, you know, some historical figure or something. And I just remember them kind of looking at each other and then looking at me and saying something like, I don't remember you being this funny. Like I had come back a changed woman.
You evolved. You know, I think it is so cool when people who are on their own path get to be with other people. And what I mean by this is I always found, you know, you said the drama group, I think in our high school, it was like the drama geeks, you know, they would call themselves that too. And it just seemed on being on the outside looking in, I'm like, these people are so comfortable being themselves. They are so accepting of themselves seemingly and of each other. And conversely, you know, being that person and going to college and trying to, you know, often all the contortions and the peer pressure. So, I mean, I just imagine going to a school where you got to be you with people who were into what you were into was a pretty positive experience.
Absolutely. In high school, I had two very close girlfriends and then, but I never really knew which group I belonged to. I didn't have a whole group. And then when I got to college, I mean, I still miss those days because it was a real community of people I found. And it was just a huge group of super close friends that hung out just all the time. And my son actually went to like a theater camp, a theater summer camp last year. And he came home the first day and he literally said, it was like I found my people. I mean, he was 7 years old. He was 7 years old and he recognized that.
Wow.
He was like, they're all silly like me.
It's so important. So quickly in school, in wherever, sport, just out in the world, you start kids unfortunately start to, it gets pointed out how they're alike or different. I mean, by others, right. But also they see it themselves. And the longer we can help them stay connected to who they are and stay true to themselves, right? Like this is the whole thing that we are,
right.
Many of our adults are still trying to figure out as well. It's just, it's so important with that authenticity and that acceptance of who yes. one is.
Yeah. I fought video games for a long time. My husband is really into video games and he introduced our son real early. And this kid loves video games. He's playing some right now while I do this podcast.
Excellent.
And I really hated it for a long time until he kind of grew old enough. I mean, he's only 8 now, almost 9, but I can tell that this is something he is actually passionate about and will love his whole life. He would love to be some kind of game designer or be involved in it professionally, it seems. And it's not like I'm pushing him to play more hours of video games in the day, but I have come to a really good acceptance of it. And that, you know, it makes him so happy when I relate to him about the video games and talk to him about it instead of just trying to change the subject and try and make him more well-rounded, you know, just kind of accepting that that's his thing. And he loves that a lot.
Well, I know it's a hot topic these days, but it's great that you're leaning into it because people talk about these things that they see in their kids is almost as being pre-vocational, right? The kid who's always debating, who's always, in a sense, even arguing, but articulately, like that's pre-vocational, even when it's annoying. And the idea, there is gaming to just numb, and there is gaming when it just can be too much, but there's also what you describe, like gaming, where there is this passion and this, a strength, like it's really a strength.
Yeah, and it is. And the way he talks about it is so, I mean, I know he's 8 and he's talking about ridiculous video game, but the way he talks about it is so knowledgeable. Like he's an expert and that gives him a great confidence. And when he meets other kids who like the same games, he has a way to connect with them and he can even articulate that to me like, oh, I became really good friends with so-and-so in my class today because we talked about this one game we both really love, this balloon game.
Yeah. Yes. So weirdness. You talk about yourself as a weird wife. When I sense like you have positive, like when I just listened to your album, I just felt like you're just owning yourself. You're just like, this is who I am. And this is how I see the world. And I'm going to share it with you and enlighten you all.
I think that's what I try to do. I think it's important. I think Truth in Comedy is a, you know, that's the title of a book and it's the most important thing in comedy to me. Mm-hmm. And, my comedy is very personal. I learned from a friend, actually, a colleague, Maggie Ferris, is a very funny comic as well, on Blonde Medicine as well. And she used to take me out to open for her. And we went to a lot of rural gigs, because that's what you do when you live in Minneapolis. She's gay and very openly so. And I asked her once about like just how it was going to these crowds that maybe aren't exposed to gay people very often. And just she basically told me you got to double down and be who you are. And if you're who you are, they will accept you. Mm. And I had done another gig in a small town. And I think I had tried really hard to I was like, okay, I am a Midwestern lady. I can just like turn that part of me up and turn down the weirdness. And this was a long time ago, but I very quickly learned that didn't work.
No.
And so now I just go in and I'm like, I'm weird and I'm different from you. And they can be wearing camo. And as long as they know that I know I'm different.
Yeah.
They're good right. with it.
Yeah. Well, that's that self-awareness, right? Like yeah. knowing who you are and knowing how you might be perceived right. and making a conscious decision of how to be in these different scenarios.
Yeah.
I like the double down. I like the double down on who you are. That's
sure.
very wise. Yeah.
You have to. If you try and hold it back, it won't work. And I mean, I think that is for comedy, but also for life. And
yeah. Yeah, for sure. And in your album, there's a couple places you go, and even towards the end, I mean, you can hear people are laughing the whole time, but I know there are like, you're like dropping the hammer. You're like putting the pedal down, right? And you're talking about these things that are like very personal, very female oriented, talking about body parts and making like some people feel uncomfortable in a way that it's hysterical, right? Like,
sure.
I don't want to give away all the stuff, but
no, it's fun. Yeah. It's fun to make men feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
who doesn't yes. want a little bit of that?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's self-deprecating, but there mm-hmm. has to, that's kind of a negative word, right? Even in comedy, self-deprecating kind of went out of style because people were like, it's a little much when people are too self-deprecating. But if there's a confidence and an awareness behind it that isn't truly self-loathing, then mm-hmm. it can be really fun.
At Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan, you know we love all kinds of moms on this podcast, regardless of your path to motherhood. The moms in our lives take such good care of us, and now it's our turn to return the favor. OneSkin is here to help us do just that. Founded by 4 female doctors, OneSkin believes that good health is about feeling unstoppable inside and out. All OneSkin topical products are formulated with OS1, which is the first peptide that's been scientifically proven to reverse skin's biological age at a molecular level. You can shop individual face and body products or check out their bundles and eco-friendly refills and reusable pumps. Since launching in 2021, OneSkin has received over 8,000 5-star customer reviews and counting, which is proof that their success goes far beyond the lab. Now, I have been using OS1 products for the last few weeks, and as someone who is not typically a facial product person, I can tell you that my face is smoother and softer. It's true, people. And I've been using face topical supplements and essential eye cream, and I am going to continue to use them. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and behaving younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOOTPRINT at oneskin.co. That's 15% off at oneskin.co and use code FOOTPRINT. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
What is your process? Like when you came up with this album, how do you go about coming up with your shtick and how much of it, okay, double part question. And how much of it do you actually stick to when you're up there and does like mm-hmm. the spontaneous brilliance just pop out?
Well, I wish I had a good answer for this process question, but I don't have one. Mm-hmm. It's so slow in stand-up, and I've said this before. I used to do sketch comedy and improv mm-hmm. for a very long time. And that process for sketch comedy is way faster. You're like, hey, we're going to write a show in the next week and a half, you know, and then we'll rehearse it and then put mm-hmm. it on. And with stand-up, it's like we wrote an hour and 20 minutes a few times a year in a week and a half as a group. And now it takes me years to get the right things I want in a little 5-minute bit. So honestly,
yeah.
I mean, hopefully my next one will go a little faster. I was, you know, going through a pandemic and being the mother of a very young child when this material started coming to be, but some of it is old, some of it's 7 years old or whatever. And then one day you bring it back out and you find the perfect new thing that makes it feel complete. And then you have this set of all these little chunks. Like some people have really short, you know, minute long bits, and I don't know how they do it, honestly, because they have to jump from one thing to the next and know what's coming or just make it up as they go. Mine is, I have mostly like my bits or chunks or whatever you want to call them are usually more of story style, maybe 2 minutes at the shortest, but like 5-6 minutes sometimes just telling a story. Anyway, you just kind of piece those together and see what order it feels natural in. And then someone's like, I guess you have an album, you know?
Well, and that's where I think the art comes in as a receiver of it, because it just seems very casual and it just flows, right? And the story to story. And it's obviously a very thoughtful approach behind the scenes that ends up with that.
And at the same time, sometimes there's no thought. Sometimes you're just like, I have this story about a squirrel and then this story about a pap smear, and I don't know where to put them. So they're just going to go next to each other. Yeah. But the nice thing about stand-up is there's always a through line because it's me.
Yeah.
You know, so I can talk about two completely different things, but there's going to be some thematic similarities because it's my life and my thoughts.
You run through it all. I loved the piece where you were just riffing off the dogs, you know, the people in the crowd with certain kind of dogs with certain names.
Bella and Piper.
Yeah, there you go. Bella and Piper. And bringing, it kept coming back to Bella and Piper when you didn't, of course, know those dogs before you were up there. So that was part of the just being right in it, right? You got to be very, you have all your stuff, but you also have to be really present
in absolutely
the moment.
And that's where, honestly, I mean, I don't work for Big Pharma by any means, but Ritalin really comes in handy. because that, to be present is everything with stand-up, because there's such a relationship with the crowd. Even if you're doing all scripted material, there's so much more of a relationship with the crowd and their responses than in anything else I've ever done performance-wise. And as far as sticking to stuff, when I have something scripted, it's pretty scripted. It might not sound like it, but it probably is.
Since you brought up medicine, let's circle back to that, because I think by way of using your experience to help and enlighten others listening, you know, medicine is, people have mixed feelings. Well, first of all, hopefully people have mixed feelings about Big Pharma, which is different than necessarily the medicine that is being produced. So there's that whole thing.
I have some pretty direct feelings about them.
Yeah. I bet. And I'm sure that we are aligned. And then there is the, for some, stigma, and for others, like, thank goodness that this exists. Can you say a little bit about your process of deciding to take medicine and the impact it has had on you?
Well, I mean, I've taken medicine, not Ritalin, but I've started taking Prozac in college. And I don't remember if anything else really came in or out. Probably tried another one here or there, but I still take Prozac all the time. I'm not I have no stigma around that. It's been so long and I feel like, don't we all at this point? And then when I got diagnosed, it was kind of like, what if this changes me? What if I'm not funny? What if I'm not fun to be around. What if I just become a serious, focused person?
Right, right.
And my parents were actually visiting. Bert, my kiddo, was a toddler. Mm-hmm. And my parents were visiting and my husband was there and we all were going to go to the park and it was going to be a real chill day. And I was like, I'm going to try it today. This will be the first time. And the crazy thing is with Ritalin or Adderall or any of those stimulants, they are like a light switch. You turn it on or off. It doesn't need any time in your system to build up and work. It's either you're on it or you're not. And so I took it that morning and we went to the park. And I had a conversation with another mom while our kids played about our kids or school. Or I don't know, you know, just park right. chat. And it was the most calm and least socially anxious I had felt in a really long time. Mm. Just because I was able to do this very simple task without the anxiety of my attention, because my attention was being pulled in four different directions, making sure my parents were doing fine, my kid was safe, this woman was not thinking I was too weird, you know, thinking all of those things at once and being able to have a normal conversation mm-hmm. felt new and awesome. And I described it to people kind of as, what did I say? It was like if my ADHD brain is like I'm trying to watch a TV show, but I'm seated in the middle of a carnival and there's all this stuff going on around me and all these distractions and I can't hear the show and I don't know what's going on. It's like putting headphones on and now I can hear it. And I know what's happening and there's still all these distractions, but it's doable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is a really, I have a good visual, right? That really helps that idea of like being in the carnival. And this is where people who do not have any of these similar challenges just can't understand. They're like, well, yeah, you just tune them out. You just like focus on playing the dart game at the, you know, like don't yeah, look at the other right. things, but it just doesn't work that way with different brains.
Right.
So, okay. A few things about that. One is I do know, creatives who have been worried about, whether it's an antidepressant or a stimulant mm-hmm. impacting their creativity. And some is to worry that has not happened. And for some, they did feel like, yeah, I just do feel a little less creative. Did you have any of that impact?
No, I truly only had positive impact. And you know, I thought the same thing when I started taking Prozac. I was doing a lot of acting in college, you know, plays mm-hmm. and things. And I was really worried that it would make me a bad actor somehow. Mm-hmm. And it had no effect for me in that way. Mm-hmm. Only positives. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's something to be said with like antidepressants and art. And like, I get that some of the best art comes from being sad, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. Or feeling differently about things than other people do. But yeah, I never had that experience. I think that, I mean, I still write sometimes from a place of weird, sad clown, but, yeah, I think medication has only helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there were even little like specific things with Ritalin. Like there's when you do stand up, when you do short sets at a place, they'll have a light usually, you know, and you don't want to run the light. That means they give you the light when you're supposed to get off stage and you got to wrap it up and go, or you're running the light and that's really rude and bad and they won't put you up again. Yes. So I always was panicked about this light mm-hmm. and it was like the greatest panic ever. And I tried wearing watches so I could time myself or looking at my phone or whatever. And I just felt like I never saw it. I never saw the light. And all of a sudden right. I took Ritalin and I was like, oh, there's the light. Okay.
There it is. It right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great example. Both of the processing challenges that mm-hmm. can happen And also, as you describe the, what we were calling the secondary anxiety, right? So it becomes a primary anxiety because of the difficulty processing all of these things at once.
Yeah.
And
I was trying to see the light. My brain just couldn't do it.
You know? Yeah. And now you see the light.
Oh my God.
I see the light. We've talked about some of the challenges with ADHD, with the processing and distractibility and overload. What would you say is the strength side?
I mean, I'm real fun. I think that I don't know if I don't know if I would call myself like emotionally mature, but I do feel like I'm a pretty emotional person. Mm-hmm. And I do think some of that is related to the way my brain processes things through ADHD. And those things can be really positive as well as negative, especially for what I do for comedy. There's always some emotion behind a joke. I don't know, I guess I don't know what the positives are for me. It's a hard question because some of it but I think I'm a very positive and outgoing. I'm probably really outgoing because of it, because I don't have that impulse control, which can be negative, but.
I think all these things have both sides to them. I mean, something that I've observed from clients and people in my life who have ADHD is the ability to be present, right? Like, right, to be really present in the moment, right? Because the flip side is you might not be thinking about what comes next or how this action or behavior is going to impact you or these people. That might be the negative side. But the positive side is you're right there, right now. And I think that is, like, there's a level of engagement and for many, I'm not talking about just the inattentive time type, but it's like there's a lot of like energy and exuberance that is fun, that like does come into the interaction.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's fair.
So I was curious if you had always wanted to be a mom or, you know, how that process was for you.
I did. I always wanted to be a mom. I think I knew as a kid, you know, I loved baby dolls. I loved babysitting. I loved being around little toddlers and babies when I was younger. I did babysitting all through my teens. I did children's theater in my early 20s. And I was always dating was like, I mean, I tried to be casual and chill, but I was just always looking for daddy material.
Right. All right, let's do this. You look cool and fun. Let's do this. Yeah.
My friends made fun of me a ton. You know, like everybody knew I had baby fever. I was always like, they were just like, Ellie, he's not the one, you know? Keep going. But I was ready. And then my husband and I, we talked, you know, before we got married, of course. And he was kind of unsure. He never had like an absolute no, and he never had the urge. And I was like, hey, I love you so much that like, if you really don't want kids, I'll still marry you and make a life with you, but I can't promise that I won't regret it. You know, I can't promise it'll go great. But I was willing to try. And he was like, no, I think I do. And I think with you, we can do this. And then after we got married, he kind of panicked. And was like, ooh, I don't know if I want kids. Mm. And I was like, oh, this is a huge bummer.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember that conversation? Those several conversations? Yeah.
And God, I don't think you would mind me telling this story because it kind of goes back with what we were talking about. So saying he loves video games this much makes him sound like he doesn't do other stuff. He has a whole grown up job, and he actually writes my jokes with me. He's my partner. He's incredible.
Nice. Yeah.
He's a very engaged human, but he also loves video games, and he likes his late night time by himself doing his dude thing.
Yeah.
And at one point he went to therapy and he talked to the therapist about how his friend told him he still is a dad and still plays video games all the time. And Casey like came home from that therapy session and he was like, I'm ready to have kids.
And I was like, that was the turning moment.
What changed? And he was like, well, I realized that I still can play video games.
There it is. That was the key.
Yeah, it was like, as long as I don't lose like all of my joy, I'm good.
God, that's fascinating.
And he's the best. He's such a good, engaged dad.
I'm sure he is.
Without getting into it, and I know he'd be okay with this, he had a rough childhood, and so becoming a dad was really scary for him. And he didn't, you know, it was triggering in a lot of ways.
Yes.
But he got through it, and we decided one and done, because it was really hard, and we were older. And yeah.
And now he's got a little dude to share his interest and passion with.
Oh yeah. And it's perfect.
That
I can't imagine his life without a kid in it, you know, this
See, everyone,
particular kid.
therapy just opens things up like that. You know, like you never know exactly what you're going to get. And clearly he was talking about other things related to, I'm sure, his childhood. And then it is very complicated when we think about bringing a child in, given our own experiences, but also these other aspects of our lives too. Like, how is my life going to change? Am I going to lose these parts of me?
Yeah.
And
you lose some for a while. Yeah. And then if they're really important to you, you can get them back.
Yes.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
I'm just thinking about what I said at the outset of the show about how, you know, the goal is for adults, parents to stay engaged in their own lives. And you're right. It does. There are times when all the things that we did before kids have to take a back seat. I think the point is for us to still be engaged and still try to grow, and we don't put our whole self in the closet because we have this child. Like, we still have to be ourselves and have our own desires and have fun and still have stuff while raising this other human.
And I mean, the newborn and early toddler phase was so hard on us, and we really struggled with that. So I did put maybe my whole self on the back burner, but it was temporary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was
months
or a year or two, but not forever. And
yes,
and I mean, obviously you're trying to keep some outside things going while you're doing that, but you're kind of stuck for a while.
You are.
But it passes.
When you're sleep deprived and all of the other stuff that goes with it, it's really hard to at times even recognize your former self.
Yes, for sure. Yes. You almost have to like remake it as your kid grows. You have to be like, oh, what was I like again?
Yes. Well, I was wondering how then you would say that becoming being a parent has changed you, with the exception of your sexual organs and your body parts, which you talk about at length in on the album, everyone. It's a good bit. So I know the changes that have been there to some degree. How else has it changed you?
Oh, I think, gosh, I mean, you gotta be more responsible. I'm more responsible now. I can't do whatever I want, whenever I want, because there are more consequences.
How mature sounding. You sound very mature.
Oh, thank you. Yes, that's what everyone says about me. It's and like we talked about before, it just makes you so self-aware. Mm-hmm. And so you were maybe always trying to grow and change before you had a kid, but also I'm growing and changing with more, not urgency, but like more importance, you know, it's more important that I end up turning out good, you know?
Right.
I know, right. I'm already in my mid 40s, but one of these days I'll be all fixed up and done. And
one of these days.
Yeah.
Yes.
The person that I've been trying to be all these years. But you also, you get to engage parts of yourself that maybe were always there, like that caregiver and that nurturing part. I know that was a part of me that I always wanted to use, and I didn't have anyone to nurture in that deep of a way. And that's really beautiful. And it, it connects you to the future in a crazy way, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where it's just not, it doesn't all end when you die. And I mean, not that it does if you don't have kids, like that's cool too. But I don't mean I'm going to live on. I just mean it's like it broadens your view of what's important in the future.
Yes.
For everyone, I guess.
Yeah, look at you dropping some wisdom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea that you're not just doing it for you, right? Like working on yourself and being the kind of person that you would like to be is not just for you. It realizing the implications it has on your child. Yeah.
And having a child. I mean, when I wanted a kid because I wanted that. Right. I didn't want a kid because I wanted them to be an incredible person of their own.
Right. What's
like
that?
I remember calling my best friend from high school. We're very close. And I told her, I just found out it's a boy. I was pregnant. And I gotta tell you, I was bummed. I was bummed. I was like, I really wanted a girl. I wanted a little mini me. I wanted to do girl stuff. I don't know boy stuff. I don't know what they're into. And I told her something like, I want to buy cute outfits and I want to, you know, go shopping for girl clothes or something like that. And she goes, Ellie, if you want a baby doll, go buy a doll. This is a child. And it really was like, oh yeah, okay, you're right. I mean, it's not like I was saying all those things out loud and I knew they were wrong and I knew it's more important than that and it's a real person, but it did take that moment to think, okay,
yes,
this is not for me. This is a human being and they're going to be their own thing and you're going to learn about Transformers more than you ever imagined. Yes. And you're going to actually end up pretty into it, you know?
Yes. Something you just said, which I would like to highlight because it's so important and is so difficult for many, is the idea that you said your kid's going to be his own person. And That's a tricky one, because when we bring these kids, we raise these kids, and they are in some respects a reflection of us, or at least society also makes us aware that, you know, like, if your kid's doing this, then you're good. If your kid's doing this, then you're bad, right?
You did a bad job. Yeah.
Bad job. And really, if we can do what you're saying is take a step back and realize that they are their own human being on their own human journey, and we have the privilege of guiding and ushering them. But when they start to do their own thing and be their own person, and it's not convenient, or it's not like what we thought, boy, the power of allowing that and embracing that and accepting that, as opposed mm-hmm. to trying to manage, control, and change.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I kind of lost my train of thought, but there was, even with like the video game thing, sometimes he talks to me about stuff and I'm like, ugh. Who cares? Like, oh my gosh, I wish you were into something else that I was into, but it's not my choice. He said, oh, I think I was just going to say that I don't remember. I'm terrible with like quotes, but I read something recently that really hit me hard. That was, children aren't going to be someone. They are someone.
Yes, that's good.
They are
that's
someone.
Good.
They are
they
a
are.
Person right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So trying to then realize when I'm thinking, oh, I wish he was into, you know, I always want to craft with him and like make stuff or sit down and draw. And once in a while, he'll do something like that with me, but that's not his jam. And I have to just accept that and then go play basketball because he's into that all of a sudden. And I guess I am now too.
You are. You're a baller now. Yeah.
That's what they say.
What, Ellie, what do you want people to get from your comedy, your art?
Jeez. I think a connection. I think that's honestly my biggest like goal in life is always just to connect with people. And I think when people tell me, oh my gosh, I related to that so hard, even if it's not something they've experienced or it's a vague relation, it makes me feel really good. And I mean, obviously there's some sort of gratification that I get from applause and laughter and all of that. But there's I'm not trying to change the world with it or anything, but I would like people to have a good time and feel sort of seen and related to and feel like there's a voice that's making them laugh that they get, you know, that they connect with.
Well, mission accomplished. Mission accomplished with soft bones. That's what I am experienced with you. And, we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's go to the parent footprint moment question here.
Okay.
You ready?
Okay.
Here we go. Tell us about a time that you became aware of yourself as an individual, as a parent, or maybe even an awareness of your own parents, and that new awareness had a positive impact on your life, your sons, and or those you love.
Okay. So I said I went to school for theater and I could not pass that chemistry class, just kept dropping out. And I was like 18 credits short and I decided to drop out of college. I was just like, I'm done. I'm ready for Broadway or whatever. I ended up moving into my parents' basement for 6 months, but
on Broadway Avenue. Right. Yes.
But like, I dropped out of college and my poor mother had She had been working as like a secretary or receptionist for this other college. And because of that, I went to school for free. And she like kept her job much longer than she wanted to so that I could go to college and study theater. And then I told her, I'm dropping out. And of course, there were lots of tears and lots of, oh my God, please don't do this, Ellie. This is very stupid. And I stuck to my guns and I was like, no, I'm done. And it felt really kind of contentious and awful. And then I got this card in the mail from my mom and it was really simple. And my mom was always pretty like, not controlling in a ridiculous way, but you know, she was kind of always worried. So trying to just make sure everything was going to be okay. So there wasn't like a ton of freedom, this stuck out to me when she wrote me this card and it said something like, I understand what you're doing. And it said something really cheesy. Like it said, now spread your wings and fly. Cause she was saying like, but I know that you need to do what's right for you. And that silly little, I knew it was cheesy at the time. I was like, spread my wings and fly. But boy, it felt so good and comforting and freeing. And I kind of realized at that moment how everything she did for me was always just because she wanted me to have the best for myself and be the happiest I could be. And I think that has spilled over into everything in my life. You know, I think it gave me kind of a freedom to follow my own path, even when she thinks it's ridiculous. And I think I have certainly tried to pass that on to my kid. We have a little cheesy little saying, me and my husband always tell our kiddo, follow your dreams. We always say in this family, we follow our dreams. Which is a way for me to leave the house to go do comedy shows when I feel bad about it.
You're following your dream. Yeah. I'm
like, sorry, mommy's got to follow her dreams.
That's a great message, though. It's a really important message. And for him to see you doing what's important to you, even at sometimes the expense of him getting some attention, is really important. It's really important. And I also really like about this story that it just shows how, even though you did not need your mom's permission to do this, were leaving school, you were doing this anyways.
Yep.
To get that acceptance and support, it does take a weight off, right? You said freeing. It is freeing. So like what our parents, no matter how old we get, like what our parents say, it matters. Even if we're still going to do what we're going to do, it still matters.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not changing anything based on what they're telling me now, but boy, I still love their approval when they're up for giving it, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that story. And everyone, follow your dreams. That's what we do. We follow our dreams. Let's do this. So your dreams have led to your debut album, Soft Bones, which is just the debut album. There is more to come. Tell everyone, and this is just out, so tell everyone where to find it and what you're doing, where you are.
I mean, you can find it anywhere where comedy albums are. You can, wherever you have a subscription or whatever, go listen to it there. You can buy it on iTunes. You can buy it on Bandcamp. The best place, honestly, to find it is just blondemedicine.com. Blonde with an E, you know, fancy. Yes. Blondemedicine.com. And then you can see my album and a million other really great comedy albums.
Mm-hmm. And for people who are in your neck of the woods, remind everyone where they can actually see you live.
Oh my gosh, you can come to Darling's Comedy Show. It's at 9 p.m. So if you're a parent, I understand that's pretty late. But it's every Thursday in Northeast Minneapolis at Zora Darling. Or just follow me on the socials at Ellie Hino, ELLIEHINO, and you'll see where my next shows are.
Awesome. Wishing you nothing but the best and fun and success and enjoying this and then whatever is to come.
Oh, you're so kind. Thanks so much for having me, Dan.
All right, everyone. You just got a lot of Ellie wisdom dropped about being a woman, a wife, a mother, a comedian, someone who has experience with ADHD and is continuing to grow and evolve and learn about herself while becoming so mature on the way. Please send this to everyone who you know will benefit. Thanks for being a part of this community. You know how much we appreciate you. Thank you for your reviews, your ratings. They do make a difference. And here are the two things I always suggest and ask. Try to be the person you want your child to become and ask yourself the guiding question, what footprint do you want to leave? This has been a Peters and Rossi production. Parent Footprint with Dr. Dan is produced by Laura Rossi. Our engineer is Phil Rossi. Theme music is Strummer Man, composed and performed by ProTunes. Artwork is by Garrett Ross. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Parent Footprint Podcast and on Twitter at Dr. Dan Peters. For more information, go to exactlyrightmedia.com.